Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
It's been a moment or so since we have heard from Cowboys owner Jerry Jones. Why don't we check in to see what old Jera is up to, what Jera's got on his mind, what Jera is talking about. Oh, he's talking to a Dallas radio station about the possibility of an 18-game regular season in the NFL. Now, that is not the first time Jera has brought that up. And if I know Jera, like I think I know Jera, even though an 18-game season would mean a lot more money for the teams, if I know Jerry, I know that Jerry is not going to be in favor of something like that. Jerry is not going to favor 18 games because he knows how much more dangerous that it's going to be for the players. If I know Jera, I know that's his bottom line. Player safety. Am I right? Take it away, Jera.
Candidly, it's probably physically better for players than it is to have the longer preseason, the longer practicing. Our studies show that we actually have a ramped up injury situation with players during preseason as opposed to the injury factor in the regular season. So all of this.
Thank you very much to 105.3 The Fan in Dallas. All right, then. So like I said, you know that he's more concerned about player safety than anything else. Wait, what? First off, Jerry is on the side of something that would mean more money for him? No way. No way he's in favor of that. That is really strange. I mean, I know what you're thinking. This guy only wants two extra regular season games because it means more money in TV contracts and home game revenue. But that's not it at all. He wants two more regular season games because it's safer. It's safer for the players. Two more regular season games would be safer for the players. Why? Because science. Don't get confused. He's not looking to add two regular season games and keep four of those dangerous preseason games. He wants to be really safe and add two regular season games and remove two of the high-stakes, super dangerous preseason games. I mean, that seems fair, right? That seems pretty logical. That seems like a sensible trade that's definitely founded on player safety. Because what's safer than having four preseason games where the starters almost never play? Two preseason games where the starters would have to play a lot, and then two additional regular season games where the starters would play every single snap. Hashtag safety. Hashtag science. Hashtag our studies. Hey, listen, if you need Jerry or me to explain this to you, man, that's on you. I just give up. I mean, sure, you'll say to me, hey, what about the fact that Dak Prescott is sitting out the final two preseason games and Ezekiel Elliott has not played any preseason game? And now under Jerry's plan, they'd play a total of 18 games instead of 16. Hey, to that I would say this. We all know that when the season gets to December, every player is at his physical peak. None of them have been worn down by a long regular season. None of them are carrying any nagging injuries that they picked up throughout the season that could be exacerbated on any given play. None of that. By the time they reach their 16th regular season game, most of these guys are like, hey, man, it takes me like an hour to get out of bed on a Monday morning, but let's play two more. I feel awesome. I've got an even safer idea. As long as we're trying to make the game safer, and this is actually an idea which does make the game safer, how about this? Why don't we eliminate all four preseason games and make it a 20-game regular season? If 18 is safer than 16, then you know 20 is way safer than 18. That would be the safest thing of all. Hey, better yet, why stop there? Why don't we do the safest thing possible and play NFL games 52 weeks out of the year? That way we know the players would be taken care of. Now, Jerry is willing to admit that his stance, that it's better for the players to play two more regular season games, is, quote, debatable. But he said, quote, I think it's defensible, and I really did present it on the basis that it's something I think it does, and that's create a safer game for the players, end quote. How do you not love that? I love when somebody makes a statement that's allegedly backed up by, quote, studies. It's backed up by our studies. And then he says it's debatable. And then he just falls back from studies to debatable to, quote, defensible. This guy's one step removed from saying, hey, free speech, yo. Free speech, man. I've got a right to say whatever the hell I want. I have the right to say anything stupid that I want. First Amendment right. See, here's the thing with JJ. Here's the thing with JJ. If his lips are moving, there's a decent chance that he's lying or he's saying something that's going to benefit him or both. And in this case, it is both. Given that the league is so concerned about player safety that they're changing the rules of the game to make the game safer, you would think the last thing they'd want to do is add two more games to the regular season. But then again, if you're Jerry Jones and you know it's going to make the game safer, make you more money, then that's exactly what you do. And your reasoning for that is, quote, defensible. Come on, man. Did this guy really get up there and say that two more regular season games will make the game safer? Safer. If you want more money, just say it. Playing two more games would make me a hell of a lot more money. Therefore, I think we should do it. I'll entertain that. I'll listen to that. But telling me it's going to make the game safer? Come on, Chera. Aziz Alshire. Aziz, really nice to have you on. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good.
All right, you have an amazing story, which I'm really eager to talk to you about, but it's Wednesday, and you're a few days away from your season opener at Oklahoma on Saturday. How you feeling right now, and how fired up are you for that game?
I feel good. We just got done with practice. We got it in today. You know, we worked real hard. Next 3 days, try to just prepare more mentally and get ready to go over there in Norman and do what we can to do.
Now, the fact that you and I are having this conversation really is amazing, given what you've been through, which I'll get to in a minute. But because of what you and your teammates did on the field last year, going 11-3 and winning a bowl game, there is a ton of buzz around the program right now. How different is the feeling now versus the first few years you were at FAU?
Obviously, when you look at, outside looking in, there's a lot more fan base, obviously, and a lot more people who notice you, and you get a lot more accolades and things like that. But as far as internally, as a team, obviously going 11-3 was a big accomplishment for the team last year. But this is a whole new team with a whole bunch of new guys. So we got to try to really create our own identity and make a name for ourselves.
Fair enough. Listen, what about you individually? As I mentioned in the open, you were third in the country in total tackles. So what did you focus on in the offseason to take your game to the next level?
Oh, really just focusing on the missed tackles I had, because obviously I made 147, but I missed a couple as well. So just trying to clean that up, polish up my pad level, some pass rush things, just small things to keep really working on in your game.
Aziz Alshire joining us on the program. All right, so going back to your story for a minute. When you were 15 years old, you woke up and you smelled the smell of smoke in your house. What happened that night? What do you remember next?
Really, it was like maybe 5 o'clock in the morning. Just remember waking up. I was sleeping on the floor when I went out there, thinking my sister was still out in the kitchen cooking, but she had already left, and I guess she left the stove on, and I just saw flames everywhere. I just remember really just like sitting there thinking like, damn, my house is really about to burn down. So really caught the plane going back and forth throughout the house, trying to grab my nieces and nephews and my little brothers, and just really got out the house and tried to call the police, and just really I really couldn't think of anything else but saving my nieces and my nephews and my little brothers.
So the fact of the matter is you got everybody out of the house and you didn't think anything of it, but you were credited with getting everybody out before it burned down. So what was it like when people started to call you a hero?
Well, it felt weird, obviously, because I guess in the moment you don't look at it like that. Even now, I still don't look at it like that. I never really think about it like that. I feel like I was doing what I was supposed to do or what I thought I had to do. It really doesn't hit me sometimes until I sit there and pause, try to think about it. But, it's really just unexplainable.
At the same time, you and your family lost everything in that fire. The story goes that when you left, all you left with was what you were wearing when you ran out of the house. Is that true? And then what's it like to go through the experience of losing absolutely everything?
Oh, yes, that was true. And all I walked out with was some boxes and some slides. I didn't have much of anything. It was real tough. It shows you different values, and really that a lot of those things don't really mean much. Obviously, you can replace all those things. Now I got clothes, I got shoes right now, but those people can't be replaced. So, I mean, all in all, it was really, really tough for me and my family, but it was a lot of things that I learned from those experiences, and it really helped me mold myself into who I am right now and who I still want to be.
Ribeye, pulled pork, barbecue chicken. Listen, whatever you want to put in your Masterbuilt smoker, it is absolute gold. Trust me, I've tried it. Whether you're a beginner or a seasoned professional, you'll find that just right smoker for your backyard cookout. It's easier and it tastes better than grilling. Load the smoker up with your favorite foods, set the time and temp, and walk away. Spend more time with your family and friends. It's available at Home Depot, Lowe's, Sam's Club, Academy, Bass Pro, and Cabela's. For more information, tips, and recipes, visit Masterbuilt.com. Aziz Alshara joining us on the program. Big game coming up this weekend, FAU and Oklahoma. Now, the fact is, you and your family moved into an extended stay motel and you slept on the floor because it was so crowded, but on top of that, you took the city bus to school. You would ride 2 hours to get to school because you wanted to drop off your little brothers first. So what was life like for you after the fire?
It was stressful. It was tough. I mean, obviously talking about a 16-year-old kid having to do things that, you know, just so much more mature for what it's worth. Like, I mean, having to do that is something I never want to have to do again. You know, I never wish on anybody. So just going back, looking back at it, it's kind of scary to see all the things that I was able to do and accomplish through all that.
Can I ask you, how did you do that? I mean, at that age, it would be so easy to get sad, to get depressed, to give up, but it seems like you didn't. At that age, how were you able to push through all the negativity and all the obstacles in your way to get where you are right now?
Really just keep having faith, you know, just my faith really in God, just in general. You know, I've been through so much and so many struggles, but just continue to have faith. I'm a big believer, just Anki Johnson. When I first watched his videos, my little league coach had shown me his videos, and he told me how my story reminded him of his. And so I would watch his stuff all the time, and just to hear him talk about, you know, just basically keep pushing and everything that he's been through and see how he was able to come up out of it. It gave me a lot of motivation, and that was really around the same time that was about the same year that Ray Lewis had won the Super Bowl, and I was really, honestly, always a negative person, to be completely honest, and just I was a big Ravens fan at the time, and watching the games, they were about to lose, like, every single playoff game, and they just ended up winning out of nowhere. Like, I remember Joe Flacco threw a Hail Mary, and Jacoby Jones caught it, and they ended up winning that game against Denver, and they ended up going to the Super Bowl and winning the Super Bowl, and just hearing Ray Lewis just talk about having faith and, you know, never giving up. This is something that really motivated me to get over that hump in my life.
Aziz, that's amazing. It's amazing for me to hear you say that you were at one time a really negative person, but I'm really glad you brought up my guy, Anki Johnson. He's amazing. Ink is one of the most amazing people I've ever seen in my life. I know he spoke to the team recently. I don't know that I could find a more inspiring and motivating person than Inky. What was it like to listen to him, and what was his message to your team when he met with him?
It was honestly like a dream come true, almost. It was kind of surreal talking to him. It almost felt fake. And just listening to him, you know, talk to us, is really just about working hard and overcoming adversity. You know, he talked a lot about just when you're faced with adversity, you know, that you really just got to stand up in the paint. And he was talking about a story with his son where he was taking him on the ATVs, and he was just basically comparing that to just, you know, life in general. Obviously, him and his son fell off the ATVs. You might have heard it before, and fell off the ATV, and his son was bleeding, and he was just basically teaching him how to just keep bouncing up, get back up, and just go heavy, which he was talking about, you know, going fast on the gas, just drive off. It was a funny story that he had brought up, but it was things like that, and his little stories. He has so much knowledge, and just honestly, it was an honor to meet him and talk to him and just get some type of knowledge from him.
Aziz Alshara, my guest. I do know that story. It's a great story. It's a really motivational story. Listen, before you go, a couple of things. Now, your drive has not changed at all. Your drive is really strong. In fact, Rock Bellantani, who was there, he was there when you first got to FAU. He told ESPN, and I quote, "I couldn't get him out of the office. We'd play a game. It would be at 10:30. He's texting me at 12:30 that he's sitting in the office watching film," end quote. Why is that drive so strong within you?
Honestly, it's just who I ended up becoming to be, and who I just really thinking about the things that I don't ever want to be, do again. You know, just looking back on everything I've been through and the dark places that I've been in, I just never want that. I never want to be in that situation again. And if there's anything I could do to make sure that I'm not, or my family's not, I'm gonna do it. So those things. It's easy to stay in after the games and go watch the film and break that stuff down. It was harder for me back then when I was waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning to get on the city bus for 2 hours to drop my little brothers off. I mean, that was the hard stuff. You know, this stuff is easy. This stuff that I love to do. You know, that was stuff that I had to do. And it's just really a different mindset. It's not hard to do stuff like this.
Speaking of your brothers, your two younger brothers live with you in your off-campus apartment. What's it been like having them there?
It's been cool. It's been obviously a challenge, just me trying to still do what I have to do from a school standpoint and athletically, but also trying to fill that void for them as obviously a father, but also just a role model. But I'm not the father, but trying to kind of fill that void for them. It's really challenging, but trying to just do the best that I can. My fiance helps me out a lot. Really, if it wasn't for her, I probably wouldn't have been able to do it. But it's been a lot, honestly. It's helped me with a lot, just patience in general and seeing things from other perspectives. I think it's a really good thing.
You know, but still an awesome responsibility. Before you go, let me ask you about Lane Kiffin. He joined the program last year, and obviously a lot of people had heard a lot of stories about Lane. What did you think of him when you first met him?
When I first met him, he kind of reminded me of myself in a way. He was reserved, and that's weird to say from a head coach. The head coaches I had really in all my time playing football have never been reserved. And he wasn't going to give you everything that he was. You know, he wasn't going to just open up to you. And it was kind of how I was. I think anybody, when you try to build a true relationship, I mean, I don't know if you're married or anything like that, but if you have a girlfriend, you're not going to give her everything you got the first date. And that's kind of how it was. We kind of built the relationship, and it was established that we were going to have to build that relationship. It wasn't going to be something that was just an overnight thing. And obviously now, looking a year later, you know, I just have so much respect for him. He has so much knowledge, and honestly, to me, I'm forever indebted to the Kiffin family in general. It's done so much for me, and I'm just so thankful for them being here.
My man's answered the question. I am married, 21 years in. I got a couple of sons. I know what you're talking about. You got to build that trust. You got to build that relationship. You got to build that trust. I already know. Azeez Alshire, what an amazing story. FAU's at number 7, Oklahoma on Saturday. Azeez, so good to have you on the show. Really appreciate you and your story. Great to talk to you, man. Thank you very much.
No problem, Jim. Thank you for having me.
Labor Day parties can sometimes involve alcohol. If yours does, make sure you secure a safe ride home. Everybody knows about the risks of driving drunk. You could get in a crash. People could get hurt or killed. But let's take a moment and look at some surprising statistics. Almost 29 people in the United States die every single day in alcohol-impaired vehicle crashes. That's one person every 50 minutes. Even though drunk driving fatalities have fallen by a third in the last 3 decades, drunk driving crashes still claim more than 10,000 lives every single year. Drunk driving can have a big impact on your wallet also. You could get arrested and incur huge legal expenses. You could possibly even lose your job. So what can you do to prevent drunk driving? Plan a safe ride home before you start drinking. Designate a sober driver or call a taxi. If someone you know has been drinking, take their keys and arrange for them to get a sober ride home. We all know the consequences of driving drunk, but one thing is for sure. You're wrong if you think it's no big deal. Drive sober or get pulled over. I do want to get into Dez Bryant. And I'll need time for that. But start that thought. My man's had himself an offseason. Not exactly living his best life right now. He was released by the Cowboys in April, but apparently thinks that that's all good, that it's fine. Because in response to a tweet that involved his Twitter handle, he announced that he will eventually sign with a team, but quote, "I just have to take care of me first. Gave too much love and not received at least half back. I will play ball this year. Just might be a little later in the year. We will see," end quote. All right, so it feels like he gave too much love and didn't get enough back. But he'll play. But later. But he's got to take care of himself. Yeah, I guess. I mean, that's sort of like being at a party. Going to some banging party, finding out that nobody at that party gives a damn that you're there. Nobody wants to talk to you at that party. And then you just bust out shouting, "Man, this party sucks. I'm out of here." In other words, the reason he has not signed is not because the party sucks and he bounced. It's because nobody's that interested in inviting him to their bash. Now, maybe that's not entirely fair. Because Dez did reportedly turn down a 3-year contract with the Ravens for pretty good money. apparently because he wanted a one-year show-me or prove-me deal where he could reestablish himself and then turn that into even more money. Then apparently he made it really hard for the Browns to run him down this summer, and now he's saying that he wants to wait a little while longer. Which means that we have now reached the waiting game phase of Dez's career. And that waiting game phase also coincides with the beefing with YouTube stars phase of his career. You see, Dez apparently was looking to DM some dude named Logan Paul. Again, sounds like Jeff butchering Logan Rome's name. Rogan Loam, Logan Paul. Anyway, Dez was looking to DM some dude named Logan Paul to congratulate him on his boxing match against some dude named KSI. Unfortunately, Dez sent that DM not to Logan Paul, but to Jake Paul, who promptly took a screenshot and then tweeted it out. And the exchange went like this. Dez, I see you, bro. Then 6 minutes later, Dez, I mean to write that to your brother, LOL. Jake sits on that for about 12 hours and then responds with, quote, I see you too, bro. And then chased it with this lava, quote, congrats on that four-year, $60 million contract. That's big money. And then he chased it with, quote, I meant to write that to Todd Gurley, LOL. And whichever Paul doofus this was, tweeted the screenshot with Dez Bryant, with Dez Bryant, don't want the smoke, and no team wants Dez Bryant, go Browns. I mean, damn. Dez then tweets, quote, IDK, why the dude got salty. I thought I was following his brother to tell him congratulations on the fight, and I realized it wasn't him. I guess he called himself trying to clown. We can get in the boxing ring, though, if he wants smoke. Now it's on, right? Now you got a full-on beef. So let me be very clear about this. Dez Bryant was not looking to clown Jake Paul or Chris Paul or Aaron Paul. He was looking to congratulate the other guy named Paul. And then Jake Paul got all fired up because apparently you do not disrespect Jake Paul by accidentally DMing him something that was supposed to go to Logan Paul or Paul Logan or Paul Hogan or Logan or Rogan Loam. Or who knows? I mean, damn, Dez, come on. How the hell do you not know who Jake Paul is, Dez? He was the YouTube star who got fired from his gig on the Disney Channel because of complaints about him from his neighbors, and he's the same guy who allegedly dropped a couple of N-bombs on camera. Logan Paul is the dude who posted a video with a suicide victim on YouTube. Or maybe that was Jake Paul. Who knows? I don't care. I really don't care. And because I've confused the two of them, one or both of them is probably going to say that I don't want the smoke either and want to fight me too. Really, what I'm getting at is this. I hope that I would be able to spend my entire career without having to reference either one of these guys. But that's where we are. More importantly, that's where Dez is. That's where Dez is. Odell Beckham is getting a record-breaking contract, and Dez Bryant is getting into Twitter beefs with a couple of dudes with bad haircuts. Dez, I know you want to get right before you sign with somebody, but man, I'm asking. I'm begging. Sign with the team as quickly as possible because the last thing I need to do is be talking about you on this show signing a deal to fight a YouTube star because you can't get back on a football field. This is trending badly. With Simple Contacts, you can renew your prescription and reorder your contacts from anywhere in just minutes. No more doctor's offices or waiting rooms. You take a 5-minute vision test from your phone or computer. It's reviewed by a licensed doctor. You receive a renewed prescription and reorder your contacts. All you need is your current contacts, an internet connection, and 10 feet of space. Do you have an unexpired prescription? Just upload a photo or your doctor's info and order your lenses. Instead of heading to the doctor every single year to renew your prescription, take a few minutes out of your day and do it on your own time and your own terms. Please note, this is not a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam. It is vision care for the 21st century. How easy is that? An eye test from your couch. What a time to be alive. The vision test is only $20. The contact lens prices are unbeatable. Standard shipping is free. And best of all, we are offering a promotion for our listeners. Get $30 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/Rome or enter code Rome at checkout. Once again, $30 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/Rome or enter Rome at checkout. Head coach Anthony Lynn is my guest. Anthony, great to have you back. How are you?
Great to be back, Jim.
Good to have you, coach. All right, so last year at this time, you were in your first training camp as the head coach. The team was in its first training camp in a new city. Let me start right there. How different does this camp feel compared to last year's camp?
I got to tell you, last camp I felt was good, but this year, just being here and knowing where the camp was going to be and not moving, it felt a lot more comfortable, I can tell you that.
All right, so let's get this out of the way right off the top. There is so much buzz and hype surrounding this team, not only to win the division, but to win the conference, and even more than that maybe. So what's your reaction when you hear all that, and how are you handling it and addressing it with your team?
You know, we have high expectations here and standards, and no one is, you know, going to put expectations on us that are higher than the ones we put on ourselves. But, you know, we have to go out and we have to do it. We haven't done anything yet. And so I'm not quite sure why we're being crowned right now, because, you know, we have to win this division and see what happens from there. But we got a lot of work ahead of us. We know that. And it's nice. I do like the buzz. But at the same time, you know, I have to bring reality to the situation. This team, you know, we got to go ahead and do it.
Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn joins us. All right, so tomorrow night is the team's final preseason game. Look, I know you'll use every opportunity you can to evaluate your players, but how much is riding on tomorrow night's game in terms of finalizing roster spots?
I tell you, you know, you look at guys like Austin Ekeler. He made the team last year in this game, and I've been trying to get that through to our players all week. Is we have a lot of players on this team that were considered long shots. Jahlil Adai, Trevor Williams, Tyrell Williams, you know, Austin Ekeler, you know, but these guys made the team, and this week was so important to that process. So I believe our guys will go out and they'll compete like they always do, and we'll get a good evaluation.
Now, one of the guys who might get a look tomorrow night is Forrest Lamp. Let me ask you about him, because he was drafted in the second round last year. He missed the entire season with a knee injury. He's practicing at full speed. How has he looked to you, and how eager are you to see what he can do in a game?
Well, he's not quite full tilt yet, but he looked pretty good last couple of weeks in practice. He got some live snaps in practice, so that's why we feel confident enough we can put him in a game situation. And I just believe the more he's in that situation, the more comfortable he's going to get, and he'll be his old self again.
We're talking Anthony Lynn, Chargers head coach. You know, in terms of the preseason game, there's been so much talk about how different coaches are using their starters over the course of the preseason. How are you approaching your starters in the preseason? And then how valuable are those game situations versus, say, joint practices?
Well, I played, you know, we played our starters for a little while in preseason. Phillip didn't play the first game, but because I wanted to see the two backup quarterbacks. But the starters played a quarter, they played two quarters in the third game, they played a quarter and a half in the second. You know, we set some guys, but for the most part, our unit went out and they played. I wanted to see those guys play. I think it's important. It's, to me, it's like a boxer, Jim. You know, you don't just go in the ring and fight without sparring. You know, some guys are the exception, but most are not. So I believe guys need to play a little bit in preseason. But at the same time, I'm watching everybody. And I know what other teams are doing, and I want to see how it plays out because, you know, you're always growing. You never got it, you know. So we're always evolving. We're always growing. So maybe we'll do something different next year.
So you mentioned Phillip. Every time you and I talk, we talk about Phillip Rivers. And because, frankly, I can't get enough of the guy. I mean, what do you know about Rivers as a player and a person now that maybe you didn't know when you first got there?
You know, I can't say a whole lot because I knew a lot about Rivers before I got here. But you know, he's a competitor, and he's fiery, and that's what you want on game day. You know, you don't want to take that away from the guy. But at the same time, you know, he's like a coach on the field out there. He helps guys around him. He knows the system. He studies. He works as hard as anybody I've ever been around. And that's what you love about him, his work ethic.
Anthony Lynn, my guest. All right, one of the big talking points, of course, throughout the preseason has been the new helmet rule. Three games into the preseason, what do you make of the rule and how it's being enforced?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I believe in regular season, if it's not obvious, the flags are not going to be thrown. Right now, I believe the officials are trying to really emphasize the rule, get the players' attention, let them know there's going to be some accountability, that there has been a big change. And believe me, it is a big change, and it's going to take some time to get used to. And there's always some pushback in the beginning, but I do believe we're doing the right thing for the long term of our game, and players will adapt. Like they always do.
Hey, listen, you made the point that Melvin Gordon was, quote, the poster child of striking people with the crown of his helmet. I know you're chuckling about that, but how have you and your staff gone about working with him, and do you expect him to adapt or even change his style a bit when the regular season does roll around?
Oh, you know what? It's going to happen. It's just you've been doing something for so long, you know, but now that it's on his mind and now that it's been emphasized over and over and we practice it, I'm sure it won't happen as much. But, you know, that's the way he's run his whole life. You know, he's had that flat back, crown of his head down, and he's punished a lot of people that way. And he's very fortunate that he hadn't hurt himself. But he understands the rules of change, and he's really working at getting his head up. Pass can be as low as they want to be, but, you know, you just got to get the head up so you can protect yourself and your coworkers.
Anthony Lynn joining us for a few more moments. I'm picking my spots. There's so many things I want to ask you about. Let me ask you about Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram. They combined for an absolutely monstrous year last season, most quarterback pressures, second most sacks of any duo in the league, and most of that was with a four-man rush. What is it about these two guys that makes them so special?
They just keep coming. You know, they're in great physical shape, and they play for four quarters. We have a nice rotation where we can get other guys in that we trust as well, but when these guys are on the field, they just don't take plays off. You know, every play, they play like it's the last, and that's what I love about them is a motor, and they root for one another. That's really neat to see. So I'm glad to have those two guys for sure.
You know, Lewis Riddick of ESPN was talking about rookie Derwin James. He said something amazing. Riddick said, quote, "This kid, when he plays, it gives me chills because the way he moves reminds me of Sean Taylor, just the way he glides and eats up ground. It's weird to me. I get flashbacks when I watch him play," end quote. I mean, Riddick's not the kind of guy to throw around praise like that.
Right.
And it doesn't get any higher than comparing a player to Sean Taylor. What's your reaction when you hear that, and do you see any of that?
Well, I definitely understand what he's saying because I see it myself. And, you know, I wouldn't compare a rookie to Sean Taylor because, I mean, that's, like you say, that's awfully big shoes to fill. But you can't help but to think about it sometimes when you're watching him run around the field. He does cover ground, you know, a lot of ground and a lot of ground quickly. He has good size. He's a run-hit guy, good coverage skills. He has a chance to be an outstanding player in this league for sure.
Listen, one last thought. Going back to the preseason, when you talk about the helmet rule and how you're in favor of it because you got to make the game safer, Jerry Jones was saying, you know what, if we take away two preseason games and we add two regular season games, that actually would be safer for the players. What's your response to that, and do you agree with it?
You know, I see the argument on both sides. You know, because if you take away two preseason games, you may have less injuries. I'm talking about injuries that where guys are missing the whole season. But at the same time, you may miss out on a lot of really good players. You know, Terrell Davis never would have been a Hall of Famer if he only had two preseason games. You know, so you're going to miss out on some of those, and you got to be willing to accept that. But I definitely can see it from the safety side.
Chargers open up their season September 9th on CBS. They're going up against Kansas City. Anthony Lynn, their head coach. Anthony, great to have you back, man. Appreciate you,
great
and always
to
good
back,
to have
man.
You on the show.
Next time, I hope my voice is a little better.
Coach, you sound great. You sound great. You're on your grind. I get it. Listen, thanks for playing through it. Appreciate you.
All right, Ron. Talk
Take
to you
care.
Later. Bye-bye.
If you've got a to-do list before the long holiday weekend, make sure you work smarter, not harder. Use Stamps.com to cross that trip to the post office off of your list. That's right. You can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, and you can do it using your own computer and printer. I do it all the time. Then the mail carrier picks it up. Click, print, mail, you're done. It could not be any easier. You may not know it, but I have a stack of important letters and packages and merch and all sorts of business from this show that I have to handle. I let Stamps.com do it. It is so easy and it saves so much time. I should have done this so much sooner. Right now, use Roam for a very special offer. It includes up to $55 in free postage, a digital scale, and a four-week trial. Do not wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the radio microphone at the very top of the homepage. Type in Roam. Once again, Stamps.com, enter Roam. Stamps.com, enter Roam. R-E-X-A-B-Q. Let's do it. Hey, Rex.
Hey, Romy, the ceiling is the roof. Is there anything more pathetic in this world than middle-aged strip club guy rolling into the lot at 11:30 a.m. on a Tuesday in his vet and tossing the keys to the valet, who proceeds to shoehorn that piece of crap between two lifted Dodge Rams? Then this guy combs back his receding widow's peak before hitting up the ATM in the club with a $9 withdrawal fee, then proceeds to chat up the bartender while partaking in the, quote, prime rib buffet that still has marks where the jockey was hitting it. Romy, I can't even talk about this anymore. It's so depressing. War using E-Trade account for legal purposes and unwar pumpkin spice latte season. Late.
He did it. He made it to the end of the phone call. Rex, rock him. Jeff from Richmond. Jeff, what's going on?
Jim, thanks for the vine, and thanks for the time. And Jim, let me first of all say to the millions, Jim, and the millions of my peeps across the fruited plain, Jim, that finally, Jim, the dirtiest player in the game has come back to the Jim Rome Show. Jim, since we're competing for a master-built smoker, I wanted to come in, Jim, with a level of intensity that can only be exhibited, Jim, by the great actor Leonardo DiCaprio from the classic Quentin Tarantino film, Jim, Django Unchained. Remember, Jim, the dinner table scene where plantation owner Calvin Candy said with such intensity, Jim, put your hands on that turtle top table. I said, put your hands on that turtle top table. There's a lot of lies being told here tonight. This I know to be true. Jim, in terms of the 2018 smack off, I can only express my frustration and disappointment by saying this phrase, Jim. I am wounded, Jim, but I am not slain. I will lay down and bleed for a while, but I will rise to fight again. Other than that, Jim, I can't really comment on the smack off, and I don't want to go coach Bill Belichick on you and the clones, but I can't really talk about the 2018 smack off when I'm looking forward to the 2019 smack off. I can't go back and talk about 2018 when we're focusing on 2019. I can't talk about the 2016 smack off or the 2015 or the 2014 or the 2012. I hope you can respect that. Oh. Jim, what about world-class tough guys? Who comes to mind, Jim? 19-year-old menacing Mike Tyson. How about Steeler linebacker great Jack Lambert minus the chiclets? What about UFC tough guy, Jim, superstar Brock Lesnar? Or how about NHL enforcer Chris Pronger in his prime, Jim? Here's what I believe. I believe the toughest and most intimidating dude walking the planet Earth today, Jim, is White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Hank Huckabee Sanders, Jim. Dude stands 6'5", 275. Dude has a short fuse, and dude does not play, Jim. All I'm saying is this, Jim. You should never, and I mean ever, mess with Hank Huckabee Sanders. So what you gonna do, clones? What you gonna do, newbie clones and 2.0s, when the dirtiest player in the game, Jeff from Richmond, comes back to the jungle and runs wild on you? Jim, thank you for your time. Aloha means goodbye. War Commonwealth of Virginia. War Matt from L.A. getting his jacked up chiclets fixed by consulting with Jewel and Michael Strahan. War Danica from Jacksonville bringing home 2 or 3 tenderonis this fall after the Jags games and wrecking them. War Matt from L.A. struggling to be relevant in this here jungle. War IRA Craig choosing to be homeless because being homeless is always a good choice. War Mr. Automatic J. Stu without the nicks and cuts of a blade. And until next time, Jim.
Good night now! Jeff in Richmond. Well, there's your smack-off call. He didn't get in that day. All right, clones, go ahead and respond the way you normally do. Yeah, 2004 called. Jeff, it wants its call back. Equal time. It's only fair. We go to L.A. Matt in L.A. Yo, Matt, what's up?
Romy Rome. I wouldn't so much call it a smash up as a graze. But thanks for the vine, Jim. Give a quick fist bump to my boys at CBS Sports for pimping my photo gallery in real time. Because real men put real photos from, like, last week or today, that type of stuff. Speaking of which, Jessica, just because you recycle cans for a living doesn't mean you can recycle my smack, even if it is the best part of your call, son. And I'm about tired of your catfishing ways, because we got the TV now. Put up pictures of your estate. You show no evidence of this BS spouting off from that fountain of misinformation riddled with tooth decay ridden, discoloration splashed, tobacco stench and badger innards that you call a mouth. Other than the fact that you yourself carry yourself like a played out, simpleton smack wielding, cow dung retriever, you ranch hand. By the way, I use my Masterbuilt smoker regularly because I earned it. I'm a jungle fixture. I don't think Masterbuilt wants to be seeing your redneck rendezvous at the ranch hand compound with squirrel mulligan, muskrat casserole, and barbecue blackbird on the menu. So why don't you just take it all away, Jeffro? You're like that loser from high school who peaked in freshman year and has been chasing his identity ever since, you glorified milk teat ganker. I'm repping the jungle hard like the L.A. concrete streets I've been known to roam, son. You can dream of having my rep all day, Odin Polonese, but it ain't happening. What is happening is my hand is getting bruised from repeatedly bitch-smacking you, Jeff. So why don't you fire up that ride-along John Deere mower and get to riding off into that sunset? Because you're the rear-view mirror of the jungle, and I'm the future. So keep my name out your mouth, kid. War Jeff in Richmond calling hopped cargo trains his lift app. Unwear those Virginia Slims that dangle from Jeffro's grill. Outro.
All right, Matt. Matt would tell you, Matt's like standing over him like he's Sonny Liston and he's Cassius Clay. Matt would tell you he won that fight. Matt would tell you he knocked his ass out. I would tell you we all lost. We are joined by Michael Lombardi. Michael, good morning. Nice to have you on. How are you?
Thank you, Jim. Great to be here.
It's great to have you here. All right, Michael, let me start first with reports that Aaron Rodgers is on the verge of signing a deal that would make him the highest paid player in NFL history. Huge, huge numbers, a lot of guaranteed money. What would that deal mean to him, the Packers, and the rest of the NFL?
Well, look, we're seeing the market getting driven up continuously. As we saw it with the wide receivers, when Sammy Watkins gets $16 million, that helped the receiver market and the quarterback market. Jimmy Garoppolo, Kirk Cousins, all these deals is why free agency helps set the market for guys who don't become free agents. And I think Aaron Rodgers is certainly worthy of becoming the highest paid player in the National Football League. He's the best quarterback. He does more for his team than anybody. And I think this is a well-deserved contract, frankly.
Michael Lombardi joining us. Do you think right now he is the best quarterback in the NFL?
I do. I think what he does is so unique. He's good at the line of scrimmage. He can make plays with his feet. I mean, look, the Packers are a Super Bowl contender. They've had bad defenses the last few years, but he's been able to keep them in contention in terms of playoffs because of his skill set. And he hasn't had the best skill players around him. They've been in a model in Green Bay, Jim, where they've only utilized the draft. Now, Brian Gutekunst, the new general manager, he's taken that a different approach. So he's going to get better skill around Rodgers. I think it's going to make it a better team.
Michael Lombardi is my guest. Now, Michael, you mentioned the wide receiver market. I thought you wrote a very good piece for The Athletic where you broke down the Odell Beckham Jr. deal. Despite the suggestion earlier in the offseason that the Giants could trade him, was there any doubt in your mind that not only would they not trade him, that they would get a deal done with him as well?
Yeah, I think what I tried to portray in my piece was that this whole plan of what's happening at the Giants has been status quo. The Giants didn't want to make any changes, and part of not making any changes is they were going to always sign Odell Beckham. He was never going anywhere. I mean, the reality was John Mara decided that his team was closer to the 11-5 team than the 3-13 team he was witnessing. Now, what I try to draw out in my piece is if people pay attention to the last 5 years of the National Football League, the Giants have not been good. They're 33-46 over that time. Eli Manning has declined every single year in most statistical categories. This is not just, oh, Lombardi, you work for the Patriots, you hate the Giants. This is facts, and you can't dispute them. Now, you might make the argument, well, the offensive line hasn't played well. Well, Aaron Rodgers' line doesn't play well at times either. Tom Brady's had some breakdowns in his offensive line, but great quarterbacks always find a way to maneuver around an offensive line. Just look at Deshaun Watson, what he did when he came on the field with Houston behind a bad line that Tom Savage couldn't do when he started the first couple games. So, to me, Eli is sliding down, and the Giants had no interest in rebuilding. They were all about repairing.
Yeah, I was going to say, what does that say? What does that deal with Beckham say about how they feel about Eli Manning, and how do you feel about their evaluation of Eli Manning? You've touched on this, but what do you make of the way they evaluate him and the way he's played?
I think they see a different player. I think they're caught up what I call the endowment effect. I mean, when you buy into somebody, you end up becoming so loyal to them, you can't see the faults. And that's a term used in business. And whenever we make decisions, we tend to have bias in our decisions. I think the Giants are being really biased. And when they hired Dave Gettleman, who's a fantastic scout, but Gettleman's part of their culture. They did not bring somebody in that was going to say, we don't want Eli Manning slipping. We need to get a quarterback. They wanted somebody to come in and say, we think Eli can play 4 or 5 more years. I wouldn't be surprised, Jim, if they redid Eli Manning's contract to extend him further. I mean, they're all in on Eli Manning. It's not Davis Webb. It's not the kid from Richmond who's going to be the quarterback. They're going to get stuck with a huge contract with Beckham. And if Manning's not the guy, they're going to have to go out and find a guy. And it's hard to find guys.
Michael Lombardi, my guest, he's got a brand new book coming out, which I'll get to in a minute. Michael, one more thought about that. So if, in fact, you feel that strongly about Eli Manning, do you think it was a mistake to draft Saquon Barkley?
I do, because I think, look, I think Saquon Barkley is a fabulous player, and I think he's great. Don't get me wrong. But I think that we've learned one thing in the NFL. Running backs don't lead you to Super Bowls. Quarterbacks do. It's a passing league. People that understand that in the game, the most important stat in football, nobody talks about this, Jim, the most important stat in football is first half point differential. And what that simply means is how many points you score in the first half versus how many you allow. The top two teams last year, New England, Philadelphia. The top two teams the year before, New England, Atlanta. Getting the lead is the most important thing in football and playing from in front. The Philadelphia Eagles did it most of the year. Frankly, they did it probably 15 of 16 games. Now, that being said, to get the lead in the first quarter, you've got to throw the ball. Running, all it does is get you field goals. Throwing the ball gets you the lead. That's the whole concept of the West Coast offense. That's what makes it so dramatic. You've got to get the lead, and then you run the ball in the fourth quarter to keep the lead. And I think that's what you're missing. So when you don't have a quarterback, you're tentatively always playing from behind. The year that Eli won 11 games in 2015, he had 6 game-winning drives in the fourth quarter. They were always playing from behind, and that's hard to do.
Michael Lombardi joining us. Now, Michael, your book, Gridiron Genius, comes out on September 11th, and it opens up with a foreword written by Bill Belichick, and he opens the foreword by writing about working with you when he first took over as head coach of the Cleveland Browns. Take us back. What do you remember about those early days with Bill in Cleveland?
Well, you know, Bill was remarkable. Bill walked into the organization, and like all great leaders, he came in with a plan. He told everybody in the building, I want to be a big physical football team that can control the line of scrimmage and can play in any kind of weather. We're going to be mentally tough. We're going to work hard. And here's what I want in every single type of player on the field. And he gave us direction. And then he gave that message to everybody. And then we started to rebuild the football team that was 3-13. That was horrendous coming off the last year of Bud Carson and Jim Schaffner. And we went to work and we developed a grading system together that is being used today in New England with modifications. And we decided this is how we wanted to build a team that was on Lake Erie. Unfortunately, what Bill does such a remarkable job is building the culture. It's his culture. Culture wins in the NFL. That's what my book's about. My book's about culture and how to create a culture and why cultures win. And I think what Bill did in Cleveland was that. However, Modell wasn't always into that culture. He wanted to be part of something else, and I think that's what happened. Now in New England, when Kraft gave him the reins, he allowed Bill to build the culture. We now call it the Patriot way, but that's all culture-based.
All right, so when you talk culture, also you spent time with Al Davis and you spent time with Bill Walsh. You spent time, of course, with Bill Belichick. I mean, in terms of culture, what about that? I mean, does a team have a winning culture, or does a team – like what comes first, the winning or the culture? Do you have a good culture because you win, or can you not win unless you have a good culture?
Well, Walsh believed you had to set the culture. I mean, he was all about – these people talk about Bill Walsh and the West Coast offense. People talk about Bill Walsh and – you know, designing the quarterback. Bill Walsh was about one thing and one thing only, the standard of excellence. He had 17 principles that he was going to instill into the organization. And it was so detailed, Jim. It was so managed, and he was on top of it. I can remember a game, and I wrote about this in the book. We were playing in the preseason at Candlestick Park, and I would always be with the coaches. I was a young, kind of a gopher, to put it politely. And I was always in the coach's box, and I can remember Bill McPherson turning to me before the start of the second half of a preseason game and saying, Coach Walsh wants to talk to you. And my hands were sweating. I'm like, what does he possibly want with me? He gets me on the headset and he tells me, look, Michael, when I get back to the office, remind me I need to fire the PA announcer. He's doing a horrible job. Okay? Mm. And so that next Monday or Saturday, I think it was, we played on a Friday night or something, I told him, and he went, so I need to talk to this guy because he's not doing the job that I want him to do in the organization. That's how detailed Coach Walsh was. Everything was meticulous. It's the same thing with Belichick. There's nothing that happens in the New England building that goes what he doesn't want to do. You see Hard Knocks last night. You see Todd Haley talking to Jarvis Landry, pleading with him to get some of these young players to buy in. You know what that tells me? They don't have a culture. Because when the players are trying to get the other players to buy in, you don't have a culture. You can't win. You can win a couple games. You can't sustain winning in a league that's very hard-pressed. So, to me, it's all about culture first, then winning happens.
Michael Lombardi, my guest. His book's coming out soon. Now, Michael, there's so many other things. I got to pick my spots here. So many things from the book that I want to talk to you about. But one of them came up in a conversation I had with William McGinnis yesterday, and that's the notion of character and how tough it is to evaluate character. Sometimes a draft prospect makes it easy, such as when you spent some time with Lawrence Phillips at the Combine. What do you remember about that session? What happened?
Well, it was unique. Belichick and I are on our way out in Cleveland. We had the sixth pick in the draft, and we also had the later pick in the draft. Jim Schwartz, our graduate assistant type coach, he was working in the scouting department, now the Eagles defensive coordinator, was in love with Ray Lewis. He just loved Ray Lewis. He made cut-ups of Ray Lewis. So we wanted to interview Ray Lewis at the Combine, and we wanted to talk to Lawrence Phillips at the Combine. So we got them both in the room at the same time. And you could just see from the minute, Jim, we put the tape on, and the beta tape on the projector, and we started talking about the Oklahoma game, and we started talking about the Miami game. Ray Lewis knew every single thing that was going on in the defense. He was engaged. He was enthusiastic. Jim Schwartz, actually 6 months earlier, was in Phoenix, Arizona, without a T-shirt, without anything that said representing the Cleveland Browns, watching and observing the Playboy All-American kids as they play. And he wrote, and I still have this document, he wrote, Ray Lewis could lead anybody into any battle. Meanwhile, he also wrote that Lawrence Phillips was very non-engaged, didn't really care, was always distant and aloof, and football wasn't that important to him. And we saw that in the interview. And for us, character is twofold. It's what you do off the field, but it's also what you do on the field in terms of your love and your passion. And sometimes you can't create the love for football if the guy doesn't have it.
Michael Lombardi joins us. Michael, about a year ago, you made the point that you were not an enormous fan of the hiring of Doug Peterson, and you wrote that he might, quote, be less qualified to coach a team than anyone I've ever seen, end quote. Since then, Michael, you wrote him an apology letter, which I thought was impressive. I thought it was classy. If you're in the business long enough and you say things that people pay attention to, eventually you'll say something that you end up taking heat for. We all know this. What did you see in him at that time that inspired you to write that?
Well, look, I based it on what I was observing. He copied, and I think Doug would admit this, he copied Kansas City's offense to a T when he came in. So it was really the Eagles in his first season were a copycat of the Chiefs. It was clear to see. It didn't seem organized. It didn't seem detailed. They were all over the place. They were scattered. And for me, for a guy who really hadn't worked up in the coaching ranks, never called plays before, was it in terms of quasi-coordinator that the Chiefs had, but they really didn't have, and he kind of was waiting in the wings. And frankly, if Ben McAdoo, how strange is this? The Eagles want to hire Ben McAdoo, and the Giants keep him from going down to interview in Philadelphia, and they settle on Peterson. So, look, I was not impressed. The second year, what he was able to accomplish in terms of his development of Carson Wentz, his development of Nick Foles, and his ability to keep the team in check, and the way he took so many chances, I was wrong. And I think anytime you admit you're wrong, you learn something. I can still remember scouting Reuben Mays at Washington State, and I didn't think the kid had enough change of direction. I was wrong. He was better at what I thought. The only way you get better in anything in life is to admit you when you made a mistake. I did with Doug. I apologize. I find it unbelievable that they were able to come back and win the Super Bowl with Nick Foles, the quarterback, but they did it in a way that I admire most. They played from in front. They always had the lead. Their defense was only on the field 26 minutes. If you look at the Eagles last year, Jim, when their defense had to play 30 or 31 minutes, they lost. And they couldn't play enough. And that was really the key to the Super Bowl. The Patriots didn't keep their defense on the field enough. They gained almost 600 yards, but yards were meaningless. Time was the most important measurement.
Michael Lombardi, my guest. Michael, another thing. You, from the outside, the perspective would be that the NFL is built to create parity, and everything is designed to prevent teams from turning into dynasties. So how was Belichick, Bill Walsh back in the day, Al Davis back in the day, how were they able to turn that thing into a dynasty?
Well, they had culture. You know, Al's culture was unique. I mean, it was all that. It was all renegades, but the cultures in these two, in Walsh and Belichick's place, are solid. And this statement, Jim, Bill Walsh told me in 1984, my first draft, we would go 12 rounds from 5 a.m. Pacific time until whenever we were done. And I was running around the room like a chicken without a head, a young kid, and I was saying, Coach, you know, the Falcons did this, the Falcons did that. And he grabs my arm and he says, Michael, just so you understand this, we're only competing against 8 teams in this league. Everybody else really doesn't have a chance to win. And that was when it was 28 teams. And to this day, I only believe there are 8 teams truly competing for the Super Bowl because they're the only teams that have a culture that can win a Super Bowl. It's hard to win a Super Bowl. It's hard to get to a Super Bowl. It's hard to get to a conference championship game. The Patriots have been to 7 consecutive conference championship games. To me, that's more impressive than DiMaggio's 56-game hitting streak.
All right, so Michael, who are the 8?
Well, I think you go back and you look at it. I mean, Pittsburgh always is going to be there. I mean, their organization, their culture from their ownership straight down is so impressive to me. They don't change coaches. They don't overreact to a bad season. They have what they believe into it. And then I think when you look at Minnesota Vikings right now with Mike Zimmer and the culture he's creating, I think it's unique. Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers and the culture they're creating. I think there's some teams in the league that you just know perennially are always going to be there. And I think Seattle has going through a little bit of a change right now. I think the Rams, we're going to have to find out where they are as an organization. They got a lot of players. Do they have the right team? I think that's going to be key.
Silk Bra, Huntington Beach. I got time for him. Hey, Silk, what's up?
What's up, brah?
Yo.
As a former winner of the Master Build, I can attest to how awesome it is, bro. I got the electric one. It's plug and play. It's portable. I can take it to the beach house, to the bro's house. It's great, bro. I got to talk about thanks for having Lynn on, bro. Like Lombardi said, he's building a winning culture. The culture is awesome in Orange County at the practice facility. It's going to be a hot season, bro. If not for a few injuries last season and bad field goal kicking, would have been a playoff run for sure. The Hunter Henry injury was a kick to the junk, but we shall prevail. This is what the Raiders do, bruh. Need I remind anyone how they treated the SoCal legend, Super Bowl champion, Heisman Trophy winning Marcus Allen because he wanted some more money, which he deserved. They let him languish on the vine in his prime, bruh. It makes me embarrassed to know that Al Davis was once a San Diego Charger, bruh. Listen, I know I'm up against it, brah, so I want you to chill out. I was going to talk a little about Jerry Jones. Brah, that's why unions are good, brah. Jones got to collectively bargain.
Rack him, brah.
Brah.
Good night now!